attorney, advocate, author, public speaker, The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600. Flip that switch and turn on your brain. Here is Lisa Wexler.
Lisa enjoying another day off. I'm Ann Carrick. In studio with me now is Dr. Cindy Anderson, and she's a specialist in naturopathic medicine. Cindy, thanks for being here.
Ann, thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to share my medicine with everybody.
Yes. And I know you go by Dr. Cindy, so we're going to call you Dr. Cindy.
That's perfect.
Since, you know, that way people who know you will be like, oh, it's that Dr. Cindy. I know her. You know? Let's start with a real basic thing. You know, we were just talking during the news that naturopathic medicine is not like some sort of mysterious voodoo science. You know, there's a lot of, we'll call it quackery that is out in the world, you know, that, you know, if you drink grapefruit juice for, you know, 30 days, like everything will be cured. That is not naturopathic medicine.
Absolutely, that is not.
Right, but it gets lumped together. So before we talk about it, I want to spend a little time, you know, give people an idea, because you're also a nurse.
I'm a nurse and a nurse midwife.
Right, so you are actually combining traditional Western medicine and naturopathic medicine together. So the things that you suggest as naturopathic solutions are not... They're things that are tested. They're known to work. It's not like you're just trying some weird fad. These are things that actually work, as opposed to the quackery that we hear about from some other crazy things out there.
Yes. So first of all, my program that I went to and graduated from 14 years ago, so right. I've been a naturopathic doctor for 14 years,
yeah.
is a 4-year doctoral program. So I went to school for 4 years. I took my basic science boards, like all the other naturopathic doctors, and very similar to medical doctor boards.
Okay.
And then what we learn is after that is more specific to naturopathic medicine, like our healing modalities that we utilize. So instead of prescriptions, perhaps we'll have herbal therapies.
Right.
Or there's a wide variety of things. We know we have so much education in nutrition. And
nutrition is so often overlooked. And it's, to me, seems like the basic, obvious thing that you should start with. Like, everybody should start with nutrition.
You are what you eat.
Well, yeah. And then everything else goes on top of that. Slight side comment, you know, I spoke to somebody who recently went through cancer treatments, and you know when they discussed nutrition with them? At the end. When they'd finished all the treatment, and they're like, okay, here's your good luck off into the future packet, and here's some information about nutrition. I'm like, shouldn't that have been up front, like while you're sort of torturing the person with all these treatments, which cancer treatments are extremely harsh, no matter what kind they're treating, you know, but wouldn't you have thought nutrition would be up front to give your body like the best fighting chance to get through the treatments in addition to the treatments? And yet it comes at the end. But that is even progress, because my experience is years ago, it didn't even hit the radar before, after, during, like, you know, nutrition never even came up in a conversation with a medical doctor.
Oh, I agree. I think that there is, in medical doctor's training, there is a little bit more of nutrition, but we have many, many classes. And in fact, as you point out, this is a perfect time, if somebody is going through cancer treatment, to also go seek out a naturopathic physician and work, work together with the,
right.
you know, with our therapies. Nutrition, for one,
yeah. Just to be clear, you're never suggesting that somebody forego cancer treatments and replace them all with naturopathic. I mean, that's not really what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying, is to work together.
Right.
And there's many oncologists that actually do work well with naturopathic doctors, and they can come up with treatment plans. At the University of Bridgeport, we have a naturopathic clinic where we actually have a naturopathic oncologist. So she specializes in treatments to help people who are actually maybe before they go through radiation or chemo,
right,
or as they're going through, safely with things that are safe. You have to make sure you're taking correct supplements that aren't going to interfere with your treatment, with your medical treatment.
So that's, so does she also work with the actual chemotherapy, or is she's really just focusing on the complementary?
Yes, she's not an oncologist.
Okay.
She is a naturopathic doctor that specializes in working with oncology.
Okay. All right, so and so that's why I just want to make that clear.
Yeah,
and I just wanted to point that out because, you know, if somebody were to go online and search, like, you know, natural cancer treatments, they're going to come up with all these things that I don't know anyone who's tried them, so I don't know if they worked or not, but you know, that things that sound like really off the wall. And again, that is not what you're talking about.
So many of those, if you just Google, you're going to find a lot of negative things about naturopathic medicine, but there's so many positive aspects. You have to, there's actually an association that you can search. It's called the AANMC that actually lists all the naturopathic doctors. So
if you want to find somebody who's legitimate,
yes,
that's really the place to start, not just search in general.
Yes, and that they have a degree in naturopathic medicine.
Okay.
And then, yes, so then our treatments are going to be standards of care, really, for our medicine.
Okay. You know, and I do think there's a bit of a trend, not only for better nutrition, you know, people obviously looking more at what's in their food, but the whole idea of the integrated medicine, which is really what we're talking about, where you're combining the best of Western medicine, the best of naturopathic with, you know, herbal and natural solutions and things, and kind of putting them all together. Would you include things like acupuncture and massage are those just other alternative treatments? Or they're not really part of naturopathic medicine?
Naturopathic doctors learn a wide variety of treatments, and we do learn acupuncture, but not every naturopathic doctor practices acupuncture.
Okay.
So many of us specialize, and some of us are generalists.
Okay.
Oftentimes people confuse naturopathic medicine with homeopathy.
But yes.
So we learn homeopathy, and that's a specific kind of medicine that is amazing. I've seen it work countless times.
What would be considered homeopathy?
So homeopathy is a distinct form of medicine that I would say the basis is like cures like. And so what we do is we take a substance. It's all been... they've all been made out of different substances, over 2,000 different remedies,
okay,
and it's diluted out, and then it's kind of, you could say, sort of like a vaccine, where you get a tiny bit of something that actually helps cure what you have.
That's what homeopathy is?
Yes.
More so.
So, for example...
like some of the vaccines that used to be... they gave you a little bit of something so your body would create the antibodies so you wouldn't get the full-blown disease.
I'll give you an example.
Is that sort of the same?
That, but let's... So there's one called Allium Sepa.
Okay.
Allium is made out of onions.
All right.
So when you cut up onions, what happens?
Most people tear up.
So if somebody is crying, tearing up, their eyes are running, you will look up to see if this actual homeopathy fits that person, and then it can help. You give them a dose of it and see if it helps their symptoms.
Okay.
So it's you can buy them over the counter, but I've had people come in my office with a wide variety of homeopathy, and I'll just say, okay, throw that all the way. Let's try this one.
And let's start over.
Then I've seen it work.
Okay.
So that's just one of the kinds of medicine that we do.
Okay. It's interesting you talk about that because, you know, obviously peanut allergies are a big deal right now that, you know, when I was a kid, nobody had a peanut allergy. I remember people that were allergic to bee stings, but not peanuts. But there's a doctor somewhere who is taking people who have a peanut allergy and giving them like itsy bitsy tiny little fleck of peanut and then increasing it to help their body kind of cure itself of the allergy. And it has worked in many people. But so it's sort of interesting you're talking about where you give somebody a little bit of something to help them fix the problem.
Yes. So there's also probiotics. There's some studies being done on probiotics.
For peanut allergies, you mean?
For peanut allergies,
oh,
yes.
Oh, interesting.
But just for all our listeners out there, don't try these on your own because
right.
it can be very, very dangerous and you really need somebody trained in how to manage this and do this.
Well, and especially if somebody has a life-threatening allergy, you need somebody who works with those allergies and can try these things
and has
under
an EpiPen available.
Handy, exactly.
Yes.
With an EpiPen handy at all times, exactly.
Yeah.
So let's talk. I think hopefully we've cleared up a little bit the differences, because they're, like you were just saying, you know, between naturopathic and homeopathy and integrated medicine and alternative medicine, there's all these words going on. And I'm sure that while there is some relation between all of those, it gets very confusing. People have a tendency, I think, to use those words interchangeably.
I think so. And I think our medicine people, I'm so happy you have me on, because I don't think that people, this word doesn't get out as often about our medicine as it should.
Right. And I think a key thing you said was that AANMC organization, so that if somebody wants to go the route of, you know, naturopathic medicine, so, you know, or maybe, you know, to try things without medications and stuff, like to try that kind of solution also, that they're working with somebody who actually knows what they're doing and they're not getting just somebody who's selling the new version of snake oil.
Exactly. And we have six principles that we live by and stand by. And what we do is we work with nature, the healing power of nature, and identifying and treating the cause. So getting to the underlying cause
right.
of what's going on with that person, instead of slapping a Band-Aid on the problem.
Right.
Which, like, so if you take ibuprofen, I take ibuprofen sometimes, but oftentimes I'll take turmeric because it works very well. And like for something...
For anti-inflammatory kind of reasons.
Anti-inflammatory. Like let's say another naturopathic remedy that we use all the time, ginger. 400 milligrams, or is it 500 milligrams of ginger can work just as well as ibuprofen without the side effects, you know, without the toxicity.
Well, and there's things that people do that probably come from naturopathic medicine and they don't even realize it. Like when somebody feels like they have an upset stomach, a lot of people will drink ginger ale.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? There's people, you know, they've learned some of these things from who knows where, or they were passed down from generation to generation, and the reason has been completely lost. But a lot of it, I bet, goes right back to naturopathic medicine, is that ginger has a lot of good properties depending on what ails you.
Exactly. I think a lot of what we do is based on common sense.
Right.
But we have studies that are backing up to see, you know, if it works. We're doing a study right now at the University of Bridgeport with in our program using passionflower. So passionflower is a very calming herb. It can help you sleep.
Nice.
And it's
all need more sleep.
but that's just one of the remedies that we have, you know, that helps you sleep. It also can help calm you. So the students, they're doing
like if you have anxiety or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they're taking blood pressures before, mm-hmm. after they take a test, before they're taking their blood pressures and pulse.
Right.
And then they give them passionflower and then take it again and see if it helps.
Okay. So that's a study going on right now.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is there an area where you find more so than others that people would seek out help from you? Like, is there, you know, like what usually drives someone to come and see you or someone like you?
So for me, because I'm a nurse midwife, mm-hmm. I specialize in women's health care, I see a lot of people for women's health care.
For women's issues.
Yes,
yeah,
so like care. Menopause,
right.
presented at the National Midwifery Convention on menopause. And there's such simple things you can do.
For the symptoms and stuff.
Yeah, for like, so hot flashes.
Right. Most commonly talked about with menopause, sure.
Yeah, well, black cohosh, many people know about, but they
right.
don't know about magnesium, or they might not know about pycnogenol, or they might not know about maca. So there's just...
I don't even know what pig... What did you say? Pig what? Pygmidgeon?
I know.
What did you just say?
Pignaginal.
Pignaginal. Thank you.
Yes, it has an interesting spelling too. But
I think that's part of what makes people feel like it's like voodoo science, because a lot of the names of things are not things they've heard of. Do you know what I'm saying? Like the names of all the different things, because they're plants or something that, you know, like I just, I'm like, pig what? And it's, you know, they've heard the pharmaceutical names, but they've not heard these. And so they're kind of foreign to them.
Exactly. And so people will oftentimes, you know, they'll go to see their medical doctor and get their treatment. And then they just Google for what they think might work naturally for them. When actually, you know, naturopathic medicine oftentimes is covered by insurance.
Right.
We have inexpensive clinics like down at the University of Bridgeport, and I'm be happy to give you the hours. We're functioning very well down there.
And you say clinic, I mean, can somebody just walk in or they make an appointment?
They make an appointment.
Okay.
Yep. At the University of Bridgeport. We have also chiropractic. We have acupuncture down there.
Are those all part of the clinic, or they're all different?
Different clinics, kind of. It's all the same clinic. You would call the same number, but could schedule with.
For any of those things. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here. You're listening to WICC 600. Dr. Cindy is in the house.
Yeah.
And I'm in for Lisa Wexler. I'm Ann Carrick. We'll be right back.
On air, WICC 600. Online at WICC600.com. Download the WICC 600 app and Alexa skills. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
And Ann Carrick in for Lisa Wexler today. In studio with me is Dr. Cindy Anderson, better known as Dr. Cindy. And she is a doctor of naturopathic medicine, as well as a nurse. So she plays both sides of the aisle there, Western and naturopathic medicine. So you were telling me during the break that next week is actually a special week for naturopathic medicine. What's that about?
Your timing is perfect.
Who knew? Go ahead. I really didn't know this, but it is. Go ahead. Tell me about what's going on next week.
So next week is Naturopathic Medicine Week. And we actually have some events that people can go to and learn more about naturopathic medicine.
Here in Bridgeport?
Yes.
Are they
absolutely
at UB?
Yes. Oh, well, one's at UB.
Okay.
Several are at UB. There is a tour on Monday, October 7th at noon.
Okay.
And it's a guided tour by our UB doctor and the Garden Club. Our UB doctor is Dr. Zam Prairion.
Another naturopathic doctor?
Yes.
Okay.
He goes by Dr. Z.
Okay.
And he is amazing. He taught me and most of us that graduated from the University of Bridgeport.
Oh, okay.
We've been there for 20 years.
So
almost.
That's a tour of the clinic and what's to offer?
It's a tour of the UB Medicinal Garden.
Oh, nice.
Where you can learn quite a lot from him. And, well, it's by the Garden Club, but I believe that he's going to be there.
Okay. So it looks like you have a whole bunch of stuff. Just run through the different types of things so people at least know what's available, and then we'll tell them where to find that list.
Yes. So at Nature's Way in Stratford.
Okay.
3 to 7, and Common Bond in Shelton, 4 to 7 on Wednesday, October 9th.
All right.
There will be students there who can tell you what
like
naturopathic medicine. Yeah.
So you can just find out more about what is naturopathic medicine.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And ask your questions.
Yes. For free.
And they'll be doing blood pressure screenings.
Oh, so you can even get a little check while you're there.
Okay. Mm-hmm, and blood sugar screenings.
Nice.
So you don't have your cake right before you go.
Otherwise, it'll look like your blood sugar's elevated. Yes.
Yes. And then actually Thursday, October 10th at 7:30, if anybody wants to get up and go down to the sound, there's a morning meditation by the sound with one of our students leading that.
Is that also at UB?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Well, it says meet at the intersection of Monument Drive and Soundview Drive.
But it's, okay.
It's going to be run right down there.
Yeah, in the vicinity of UB and Seaside Park, right. Now, is that information, is there a website for Naturopathic Medicine Week? That's a mouthful. But is there somewhere where people can find out more about the events that are going on in this area so that they can check them out?
Yes, I think, not all of these will be open to the public, but those three I could post and
all right. Are you on Facebook?
I am.
So they can look for you. You can post some of the information on your Facebook page publicly so they can see it. Can you do that?
Yes, I could.
So, Are you under Cindy or Cynthia? What are you?
Cindy Anderson.
Cindy Anderson.
Or you know what? I have a I have Your Health is Your Wealth. I could post it there.
Okay. All right. We'll look at both of those. And then let me just see this for a minute. I know you're talking about the clinic hours at UB for the naturopathic medicine. So they're open, it looks like, Monday through Saturday. Oh, no, closed on Friday, closed on Sunday. So, well, the hours do kind of vary all over. So Monday, most of the day, but there's a break there for lunch. Tuesday, Wednesday is more afternoon. And Thursday, again, most of the day, but with a break later in the day. Saturday is in the morning, so people can check that out as well. So tell us if somebody is interested in getting, like they want to go see somebody who really knows what they're doing. So one, they can go to AANMC to find somebody in their area. Obviously, you're local. But if they come to see somebody like you, what should they expect? Like
yes.
If I say, oh, I want to do this, I'm going to go see Dr. Cindy. What do they get when they get there?
And you can come see me either at the UB Clinic or right. I'm at SabitaHolisticCenter.com.
That's in Southport, right?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah, that's privately, but then there's also a very inexpensive clinic down at UB.
Okay.
And what you can expect is a much more, like, so if you go to your medical doctor, usually it's a quick in and out and likely right. a prescription. So if you come see a naturopathic doctor, our appointments are typically, the first one is at least an hour long.
Okay. Mostly conversation.
Mostly like going into your history.
Okay.
And everything about you. We don't just like take care of that shoulder or hot flashes. We look at everything, like what is going on with you so that we can actually get to the underlying problem and help you remove any obstacles to heal.
Okay. Now, you can't be somebody's primary care physician.
Not in this state.
Oh, some states you can.
Some states you can prescribe medicines. We actually are working for prescription privileges here.
Okay. So maybe soon.
Maybe soon. That's our hope here. But it varies by state.
So can you sort of, from a service standpoint, can you sort of act as a primary care physician as far as like what you're doing for them, but you just can't be their official primary care because you can't do prescriptions? Is that the...
We can't admit people to the hospital, but so I always suggest somebody get their own primary care physician.
But you could be the first contact person for somebody. Like if I wanted you to be my go-to person to sort of oversee, manage my health, could I have somebody like you do that?
I have many people that do that.
Okay.
But then they need to.
Right. They still need a primary care mm-hmm. and stuff. But I could use somebody like you or you as the person who's going to kind of oversee everything and manage the whole situation with me. Like, how do I want to take care of all these things?
I love doing that. You know, it's just great because we can look at everything you're taking, figure out if there's interactions like to medicines and herbs,
right.
and also depletions. Like so many people, they're on...
deficient in certain things.
Yeah, they're like, they might be on a blood pressure medicine that depletes their magnesium and their calcium
sure.
and their, or they might
which
be...
Which is why you often hear of all these side effects from different medicines, because they drain other things out of your system, which maybe it's worth it. But if you know that, what you're saying is then you can help replenish those things that are missing.
Yes.
Okay.
So just, looking holistically what's going on with you and what might you need.
Right.
Sometimes we do specialized testing, but we also order regular labs. So
it's both. Yeah.
Yeah.
I grew up, since I was in high school with an emphasis on nutrition, but one of the things my mother always used to say is the last time I checked, I didn't have an ibuprofen deficiency or something to that effect, meaning you're like, okay, that might solve my problem for today, or an antibiotic deficiency, so that can solve it. But the bigger picture is that something else is out of balance, or I wouldn't be having the need for ibuprofen.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So instead of slapping that Band-Aid on, sometimes you need antibiotics.
You need it. Right.
Well, then let's keep your body healthy by giving the right kind of probiotics at the right time.
Absolutely. I had some antibiotics that made me so sick in the first 2 days. I stopped taking them because they were preventative, not for an actual infection. It took me 10 days before I could keep food in my system. And it was only because I finally took some flora-based probiotics to counterbalance the effects of the antibiotics for those 2 days, and before I could actually keep food in, which so
Call me next time, Ann.
Well, yeah, I didn't know you then, but it did work. So what's the best way for somebody to contact you before we take a quick break and say goodbye to you and thank you for coming in? But if somebody wants to contact you specifically, what's the best way?
Me specifically, I would go to sabitaholisticcenter.com.
Okay.
And you could book an appointment there with me.
Right.
Or you could book an appointment down at UB
at the clinic
with me and my students. Yes.
Okay. Very good.
And yeah.
All right. Well, Dr. Cindy Anderson, better known as Dr. Cindy, thank you for being here. And I know we sort of just like touched the surface, but I hope people at least have a better understanding. Don't believe quackery. If you're not sure, go to AANMC and also find a real naturopathic doctor who's actually been trained and find out if it's real or if it's not real. Correct?
That's absolutely correct.
All right.
Thanks, Ann. Thank you, Cindy.
We will be right back. We're going to talk next about the health of your bank account with Jenny Van Leeuwen Harrington, who's been here before. Don't go away. WICC 600. We'll be right back. Lisa Wexler has the day off. I'm Ann Carrick, and our next guest is going to help us take care of our bank accounts. Jenny Van Leeuwen Harrington, how are you?
Great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Always good to have you here. And again, from Gilman Hill Asset Management. I just figured I need to tell people that. Otherwise, you're just like, Jenny who from what? Why are you here?
I'm Jenny from the block.
So I'm sure you are always watching the news. It's kind of part of your job, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what is going on in the news right now that would be of most concern either to you or that we should be most concerned about from a financial standpoint?
Sure. So this is the fun part. In prepping for your show today, I literally have the New York Times online in front of me, right?
Okay.
And here's what it is. Hong Kong police shoot protester. Australia call shows Trump, blah, blah, blah. You know, all the impeachment stuff, all the geopolitical noises
right.
out there. And the beauty of my job, and the reason why I love my job, is because I get to look at that, have the same panic attack like everyone else out there, but then I get to go and say, why is the market kind of flat today? Why is the market not responding to this? Why is the sky not falling? And why did we just end the third quarter of 2019 with like the best start to a year since 1997? Why are we up 21% when you look at these headlines and they're pretty terrifying?
You would think that the world is coming to an end.
Yeah, every day.
Every day, the world is coming to an end. Oh, no.
So it's my job to give myself and my clients that reality check. So then I go through these headlines, and I look at trade and interest rates and impeachment and the upcoming election, and I say to myself, what of these actually moves the market, right? And I think the upcoming election will have a lot of impact on the market, although I think that's short-term, because what we all know is that investors and market participants really care less about the outcome than they do about just having clarity. Because Americans,
right.
American business is really resilient. And once you know what the outcome is, you work around it and you thrive. You thrive in any environment. So the election's going to be bumpy. I think the election's going to make for a bumpy market. And I think trade makes for a genuinely bumpy market.
Do you mean trade like the trade with China or trade in general?
Exactly. Like the trade war and all the noise and all the random tweets and all the like springing of tariffs out of the blue on a Friday afternoon. And then I'm not going to do those tariffs. You know, we'll kick,
right.
kick
I am going to have tariffs. I'm not going to have tariffs. You know, you know, that kind of, like you said, the back and forth can make anybody uneasy because you don't know what's going to happen. I can't plan for something if I don't know what's going on.
Right. You know, and then we had things like the Saudi pipeline and all this unrest in Hong Kong, but I don't think those are meaningful. So I think it's really trade and elections that are going to rock the stock market between now and maybe the next 14 months from now.
And you still think it's, in the big picture, it's temporary?
I think it's always temporary.
Well, okay.
There's any period that you look at the stock market through, like 10 years, 20 years, any period, there's a positive return, which means that we ultimately overcome all of that. And so I like you know, I like to use history as a guide. I know this is cheesy. I might have said this once before, and if I did, I'm sorry for repeating myself. But there's that Billy Joel song, We Didn't Start the Fire.
Right.
Right? And I always like to reference back to that because it's kind of his homage to his first 50 years on Earth. And when you listen to that song, you're like, oh, my gosh, a lot happened in 50 years, in the first 50 years of his life.
Right.
And then you're reminded that what we're living through right now is really no different, and that humanity thrives, business thrives, America thrives through all of that and marches on.
Well, you know, and people will tell you that even nature and animals, you know, they adapt to whatever's going on around them in order to continue to exist.
Right.
And so people are doing the same thing, and the economy is doing the same thing. You know, depending on who's elected, then everybody says, okay, now we're going to go this way, so we're going to adjust this and that to make sure that, you know, things still work for us.
Exactly. It is just survival, right?
Right.
So then today, I'm looking at all these terrifying headlines, as usual, and I'm looking at my portfolio, and I'm looking at the broader market, and I see, okay, the S&P is down about 0.6% today. That's not much, right?
Right.
And especially with the market being up 21%. So then I'm able to get a little more granular, and I started looking at what the top performers, what's going on in the S&P 500. Let's not just use that broad brush of the market, but let's look at what's really going on. And the top performer in the S&P 500 today is McCormick Spice, or McCormick, right, which makes the spices on the
sure.
grocery stores. And I love that this is the top performer today because it's the perfect example of life marching on. And nobody today is in the aisle at the grocery store deciding whether or not to buy their pumpkin spice to make their muffins, you know, or their pumpkin pies or their apple pie or whatever. Nobody's sitting there and being like, oh, well, there was a person shot in Hong Kong today. You know,
maybe Trump I shouldn't buy that impeached. Pumpkin spice.
Right. Trump may be impeached. You know, how does that affect my pumpkin spice?
Not really.
Not really, not at all. And then that's where I'm constantly reminded of the resilience of American businesses, and that it's not just the market, right? It's the company that makes the spices. One of the, I think the second or third best performing stock is CarMax, which sells used cars.
Yeah.
If you need a car, you need a car to get to work. And
you don't care whether somebody's being impeached or not, or if somebody is dead in Hong Kong, you need a car.
You need a car. And so I love that this job forces you, if you're going to do a good job, to tune out the noise, to take a deep breath, and to look at what's really going on in the world.
Okay.
And how people really fare.
Sure. Now, you had mentioned off the air that if sure. Warren were to get traction from an election standpoint, I assume you mean Elizabeth Warren, yeah,
yes.
that could shake up parts of the market. Why do you think that's true?
Well, what we saw before the last election, and I think this could happen again too, was when Hillary was gaining traction, when Hillary Clinton was gaining traction in the market, on days where she'd surge and she'd come out with like really strong language against the large healthcare companies mm-hmm. and the drug makers, those stocks would plummet. Right. And so I think we could see things like that. There could be language that comes out on the campaign trail that affects certain parts of the market. Like if she's gaining traction and she comes out and says something again, like the first day I take office, I'm going to ban all fracking. That could put pressure on the oil stocks. I don't think there's any reality behind her being able to do that. And that does open up a whole other conversation of how wonderful our energy independence is, and what a privilege that is for us as Americans. But I could see her rocking the energy markets with rhetoric along the way,
or at least causing a little anxiety in the energy market.
Right. And then again, if we reference back to when Hillary Clinton was running, those comments weren't long-lived in the healthcare space, but they definitely had impact for a couple weeks or so at a time. And then the market would kind of drift back and be like, oh, well, you know, even though she says this, it'd be very hard to enact, and then the stocks would recover from where they'd been. So I think that could be really loud and noisy. I also think there could be, if it gets really, really ugly, you know, we can't discount sentiment. Right, both business sentiment and individual sentiment,
right,
and the malaise that could cast. And I do think it is depressing when we have a really ugly presidential election and there's a lot of contentiousness and ill feeling. So I think that could could weigh on people. It could weigh on hiring decisions. It could weigh on spending decisions. So broadly, that could kind of cast a malaise over the broader economy. I think sentiment is a real thing.
Okay. You know, yesterday I had guests on. We were talking about impeachment, and, you know, one person said they thought it was unlikely it was ever going to happen, you know, that it would get chased up so far and then it would just die on the vine, sort of. And the other person said, oh, no, they're insider people saying definitely it's going to happen. There's going to be an impeachment. Do you think either of those scenarios are going to be a big factor in the markets, and even maybe more importantly for individuals, is it going to affect their finances from what you've seen?
Okay, so I think it would be very disruptive to the markets in the short term. Again, until we see, is he impeached? Does he remain in office? You know, who takes over? How does that go?
Right.
Right.
Well,
and then
Pence likely takes over, but yes, okay.
Right. Right. But I mean, I've heard some crazy theories out there too, right?
Oh yeah, I know.
So until we kind of know how it plays out, if the impeachment process intensifies, it absolutely adds a lack of clarity to the market in the short term. And then as it affects individual finances, that adds lack of clarity. That adds probably pressure in the short term. So if you have your portfolio and it's producing all the income you need and it's working for you and you know you don't need to touch the principal for 3 years or 5 years, this impeachment process is a total non-issue. You know, if you've got a certain amount of money and you know you need to use it in 3 months or 6 months or 18 months and you need to use all of it and you can't withstand maybe a 10 or a 15 or a 20% hit to it, then it could have some negative impact for you.
But if somebody needs that money that soon, should it be somewhere else anyway?
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
And
that would be my
thing. The first show I did with you, too. Right?
Yeah.
If they need it that quickly, then it should be somewhere else. It should be in cash or in bonds if you have that short of time frame.
Like if you know you have this money invested or saved or whatever, and you're going to use it on somebody's college education next year, it should not be in the market.
It should not be in the market.
It should be somewhere.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Or if you know you're buying a house or you know you're going to need a car,
right,
and you have no ability to take risk or sustain losses on that amount, then it shouldn't be in the stock market.
Okay, we need to take a quick break. We will come back and talk more with Jenny Van Leeuwen-Harrington. Another reminder for you that the WICC Morning Show, the Continuum Recovery Services WICC Morning Show, will have Mayor Joe Ganim on with Tony and Melissa for a coffee break chat. That's tomorrow morning at 9:30 right here on WICC 600. And it is sponsored by Continuum Recovery Services, providing an array of immediate support and emotional care for adults in need. We will be right back on WICC 600. Lisa enjoying another day off, and Carrick in studio with me as my guest, Jenny Van Leeuwen-Harrington from Gilman Hill Asset Management. Jenny, we've been talking about, and every time I talk to you and almost every expert, they all say the same thing. When the stock market is going up and down and bad news is coming in and people are panicking, you know, almost always they say, just ride it out. You know, again, unless you need that money right away, in which case your money probably should be somewhere else to begin with. If you have money in the stock market and right now and you know you're going to need it soon, they should probably move it now, correct?
I think so. Okay. I think so.
Just in
but
general.
That's nothing new. That's not now because today has different headlines. Total rule of thumb.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Not because of any current news. Just if you have money you're expecting to use right away, move it. It's basically the answer.
And you know what? You know what's interesting? There's actually decent returns on money market funds right now. Like you can get 1.9 to 2.1% in money market funds or in CDs. So it's not like you're getting nothing right now. At least you're getting a little something. Whereas for the last 5 or 6 years, there was almost nothing. There were 0.2% returns on money market funds.
It was basically just a savings account without interest.
Right.
Which is better than spending it, but only barely. You know.
Right.
I know you're a big fan of dividends, you know, especially for your clients who are working with a lot more money. Does the same concept work even if you have less money? You know, in other words, like the idea that you could, that you would invest in things that give you a dividend all the time, so you always have money coming back?
I think so. I think it depends on how much you've got. So even if, let's say you have $10,000 saved, right, and you have and you have dividend stocks and they're paying you 5%, that's $500 a year that you're getting. And you could spend that or you could reinvest it. And if you're in reinvesting it, that grows a little bit every year. This is an aside and funny, but my kids are little. They're 10 and 12 years old.
Right.
And I've let them set up their own little, tiny, tiny little investment accounts. And I've talked to them about dividend stocks and growth stocks, and I've let them choose their own stocks. And I've actually even swayed them, right? Because I told my daughter, if you buy Kinder Morgan, for example, which is an oil pipeline,
right,
it's going to pay you about a 5% dividend, which is about $9 a year on her total investment.
Right.
And that'll grow by, they're growing that dividend. And even a 12-year-old likes the concept of getting paid for her investments. So, yeah, I think it can work for anyone.
So she's investing in dividends.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think when you're not living off the money that the dividends are producing, it just becomes more of a comfort and a philosophical thing. Do you want to know that whether the market's up, down, or sideways, some money is flowing into your account no matter what? And so that's quite comforting to some people.
And that would be considered a more conservative approach, correct?
It would be considered, although it isn't. In reality, it's not necessarily more conservative,
oh, okay,
but it would be considered that.
Like the person who wants to try, I'm going to emphasize try, to make a lot of money in a hurry, that might, dividends might not be the way to go.
You're absolutely
okay.
Right. They tend to be the tortoise and the hare. They tend to be the tortoise stocks.
Okay.
It might win in the long run, but...
Yeah, no, I hear you. Well, and I know for me personally, like, you know, I think most of my investments, my meager investments, you know, most of my investments are in, like, groceries and, you know, gas for the car, but you know, the other investments I'm not spending. You know, most of them are conservative, but then I did one time, I worked somewhere and, you know, I had this, like, tiny amount of money that was associated to that job, and I'm like, you know what, I'm going to take that little tiny amount and try something... It's not in my normal comfort zone and just see what happens. Because it was a small amount. Basically, I thought to myself, I'm going to risk that small amount on some things that are a little more crazy compared to my usual choices. So
right.
Far, it's worked out. But, you know, it's a small amount. If I lost the whole thing, it wouldn't be the end of the world.
Right. So I have one client whose daughter is early 30s. Like she, when this started, she was late 20s, early 30s. And she had a very small account that I helped her with. It was, I think, $3,000 or $4,000. And so we did put it into dividend stocks because for her, getting $600 a year in cash piling into her account was super meaningful. And she's used it for Christmas presents. She's used it to replace the refrigerator. But she knows it's there. So, yeah, so it can really be like age and place in life agnostic.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
interesting.
But I agree with you. You know, if you do want to try and if you do have a long time horizon and you can stomach the growth and the volatility, then do something a little more aggressive.
I imagine the key is don't put all your money in one place.
I think that's good advice.
I mean, it's fine to, maybe that's my philosophy. It's fine to take some chances, but don't be like all in with all your chips in one bet.
Yeah, but you know what? The flip side of that is true too, which is I see this a lot where if you own tons of exchange traded funds or tons of mutual funds, then you own the S&P 500. Basically, right? If the
right.
S&P has 500 companies and you own the equivalent of several hundred companies, then all you're ever going to at best get is a market return. And if that's the case, you should never be paying more than about 10 basis points for that because all you should really ever own is a market tracking index. So it really, there's a fine line between not putting all your eggs in one place and not over, and if you're going to over diversify, make sure you're not paying too much for it.
Well, that makes sense because you're not going to have that higher return.
Right.
So you don't want to be spending all your return in costs.
Exactly. And I see that a lot. I'll review portfolios where there will be like 13 different equity mutual funds. And when you look at the underlying holdings, they essentially own the S&P 500. And each mutual fund is charging between 0.65 and 1.15. And at that point, they own the S&P 500 and they should be paying nothing for it. So at that point, those fees are just deteriorating your long-term return potential.
And I think people probably, if they don't understand what you just said, they would understand that in a checking account situation, if you had a checking account that had interest and then the bank was charging you $10 a month, you're probably not making $10 a month in interest. And so you're really, the interest isn't helping you. It's just going right to the fees.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
that's
I mean, it's the same analogy. Concept, but, you know, on a different kind of account that I would imagine almost everybody has one and has at least read about fees on a checking account in their life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, Jenny, thank you again. Jenny Van Leeuwing, Harrington, Gilman Hill Asset Management. Today's show is coming to an end. The news is coming up next. Lisa is back tomorrow. I am back next week, and we'll talk more about ranked choice voting, Access Health Connecticut and healthcare plans, and Mission Training Center, which is a gym, but it's not your everyday gym. So that's coming up next Wednesday when I'm back, but Lisa's back tomorrow. Have a great afternoon. The news is next.